And now, we begin. Let's prepare ourselves for this evening, for this wonderful subject that we're going to have. And the subject is, healing is a magic word. You may bow your heads, you may keep your heads up. All I want you to do is have an open heart and an open mind. And as you have an open heart and an open mind, wonderful things will happen. Now, all of you have heard the strange machinations that have gone on in the various churches where you have spiritualism, where you have psychism, where you have the magic of the mind that says things are strange and wonderful. And you say, oh, yes, the voice speaks through me, and I hear this, and I know that. And you say, Dr. Barley, would you mind going home? A lot of us believe in that stuff. Well, you're fools. You're fools. You're fools because you believe that something outside of you is speaking through you. You believe that it's not God in you speaking. Wake up. God in you is all. You're not the God outside here. God is everywhere, omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent, everywhere. But Sally and I, at dinner tonight, we were discussing, how can you tell people where the Akashic records are? And Sally says, well, it's got to have the ladder to get up there. Nonsense. The Akashic records are here, 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 here. God is here. All knowledge is here. All the wisdom of the universe is right here. You will not find it outside of yourself. Now, you know the book Ramtha? Delightful book. But it's an absolute lie. She said something outside of her was speaking through her. Well, that lady was speaking herself. That was her divinity shining forth in the wonderful ideas that she was presenting to you. And there's nothing strange or nothing esoteric. There's nothing spiritualistic, if you will, outside of herself. It's the divine in her being revealed. But she didn't have the courage to say, 'tis I. You know why? You know why she didn't have the courage to say, it is me? Because she was speaking for others. She was living her life for others instead of listening to the words of Jesus, who said, it is done unto you according to your belief. You see, it's not what we can teach to others. It's what is done unto us according to our belief. And that's what healing is all about. It is done unto us according to our belief. Now, Mary has been raising many little children. She's been teaching them in the schools, and she's been teaching them in her home. She's been teaching them in her church for years and years and years. And she says, you are wonderful, right? You are geniuses, right? You are perfect, right? See? And every single one of those little children who have grown up into wonderful adults are beautiful. Now, many of you have children. And because you have children, you don't want to take responsibility for them. Because they didn't turn out too good. They robbed a bank. They killed somebody. They hurt somebody. They got on drugs. They did all these dumb things. Because you were not strong enough to be their guardian angel, guiding them in their life until they were 18, ready to walk on their own. You didn't do that. Every parent who has a beautiful child has done a lot of work. Now, Sally over here, she's telling me about her dog, Sparky. I have yet to meet him. And Sparky is supposed to be a wonderful dog. Sparky is supposed to be a loving dog. Sparky is supposed to be a dog that loves men, because he's always looking for his former master, you know. Sparky is this, Sparky is that. And you know, Sparky is just what she says. Whatever she calls Sparky, that's what Sparky is. She says that Sparky, you've heard the story, I'm sure, is so wonderful that he's given cookies by other people, and he takes them to his girlfriend next door and puts it in front of her mailbox so that the puppy can come out and gather it, you know. I mean, you know, that's the kind of puppies that she raises. That's the kind of love that she puts out into her world. Now, what kind of love have you put out into your world with your children? Well, exactly the kind of love you put out is exactly how they respond to the world. Are you perfect? Right. You are perfect. You know why you're perfect? Because you're God. Because everything you do is God. Everything you say is God. Everything you are is God. God is everywhere. You cannot say, you're not God because you're not nice, and you're God because you're nice. You know, who can say things like that? Jesus said, go to your Father who seeth in secret, and he'll reward you openly. But the worst thing that Jesus ever said to any of the people who listened to him, and this is where it covers you, my wonderful man. Yeah? Speak. Say something. Okay, something. Go into your Father's temple, which is here. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all things will be added unto you. And he said, now remember these words, and look them up. We have them in our literature downstairs. Be ye therefore,
perfect,
even as is your Father which art in heaven. We're supposed to be perfect like the divine in us. We're supposed to be perfect, see? We're supposed to be perfect. That's what Jesus said. Now, we call ourselves a Christian religion, a Christian philosophy based upon that. But the Hindus teach the same thing. The Mohammedans teach the same thing. Islam teaches the same thing. Every religion, every philosophy on earth teaches the same thing. That we are perfect. Now, let me ask you. You know this picture? The little boy, he says, God don't create no junk. Remember? God don't create no junk. God created each one of us as a divine being. The God in us creates us as a divine being. But let's just play the game for a second. We'll pretend that God created us as an outside entity creating us. Do you think he's going to let us on our own until we're 18? And then you think when we're 18, he's going to forget about us? No way. He is always in us. And it's not he. It's an it. It's the allness, the God, the absolute. It's in us. And it will never forsake us. You know, these Bible terms, these biblical songs that you've heard so many times over the years in traditionalism as well as in the ordinary teachings that we're teaching. God is everywhere. Okay. Now, what do we say? God didn't create no what? No junk. Then what is this here? This is a perfect body. And if it's a perfect body, why is it we're not always expressing it as a perfect body, huh? Why is it that sometimes we have a pain in our leg, a pain in the head, you know? There's a lot of new literature out by medical science that says we're doing the wrong thing to get rid of migraine headaches and to get rid of pains and to get rid of arthritis and these things. And they're saying all we have to do is just take some alternative grass or whatever the stuff is, and it'll be gone. Or change our thinking. Change our thinking. You receive that stuff in the mail too, where it says that, you know, you can be healed by this and you can be healed by that. Well, you think you can. But you can also be healed by what you are trained to do as metaphysical thinkers, as divine beings. It is done unto us according to our belief. Now, I am 25 years old. I have a 50-year-old son. Oh, I mean, I'm 25 years old. I feel 25. I act 25. I live 25. I travel the world going around speaking to churches and colleges and universities in every country in the world, in Africa and Australia, in the Philippines and throughout Europe and throughout the United States and Canada, everywhere. And I have a ball. But if I acted like the age that some people want to say that I might be, ha ha ha, I couldn't do it. My mother died when I was, how do I say this? My mother died at an age that I have already passed. And did she have to die? She didn't have to die. I said to her when she was getting ready to croak, I said, "Mom, why are you doing this?" I said, "You've got to get your body in order. You've got to get your..." She said, "Herbie, I'm tired. Let me go, you know." And I said, "Mom, I don't want to. You know." She says, "Herbie, you're holding on to me. I want to go." I said, "Mom, you've got a right to live your life however you want. You know, if you want to go, go right ahead. And just remember, Jesus said, in his Father's house are many mansions, and there's one just for you." And poof, she went. But she didn't have to. She didn't have to. My mother was a great unity teacher and a great metaphysician. She had her church in the northern part of Wisconsin, and she had been active in the southern part of Wisconsin, many churches there. A fantastic lady. Loved, appreciated by everyone, always with a perpetual smile on her face, just a happy girl. But she got tired. She got tired. You know why she got tired? She began worrying about other people. She was worrying about how other people were doing. She was worrying about her five children, who were doing just fine. She was worrying about the world about her. I said, "Mom, let that go." I said, "You're a great writer. Start writing again." She'd written for Saturday Evening Post. I said, "Let go." But she didn't want to let go. She wanted to let go of the life and get on with her next adventure, which is her privilege, and which is your privilege. But just remember, every death is a suicide. And if you die, it is because you have not chosen to live. You have not chosen to be all that you can be. Be ye therefore perfect, even as is your Father which art in heaven. That's a tough statement for us to realize. It's a tough condition for us to come to, but it's the reality for us. Now, do you want to face that reality, or do you want to just pretend that let Jesus do it? Let Jesus do it. You know what Jesus said to his disciples? Jesus was talking to his disciples one day, and he said, "You guys, you're just not getting it. I send you out to teach and preach and heal, raise the dead, have a great time. You come back and you tell me you can't do it." He says, "I don't know. I'm going to have to leave so the Comforter can come and you can start depending upon your own indwelling presence, your own indwelling self." And he left. Now, the story that we have of the crucifixion and all those wonderful things, muffniks, that's merely a way of having the world continue to remember the teachings that he gave. Now, he didn't have to do that. Now, what would have happened if Jesus hadn't died on the cross? We wouldn't know about Jesus. Do you think that the divine in us would ignore us? Do you think that God in us would ignore us? Do you think that the Christ that was in Jesus, the man, would ignore us? It's always there. It's always there. As I mentioned before, we were talking about the Akashic Records. And that in the records are all of these beautiful statements and all these beautiful understandings and these beautiful truths. Where are they? They're within us. We can open the book at any time we wish by listening within. When you have a desire for any information, you turn within to that divine within you, and you speak your word, and as you speak your word, you claim it and you experience it. I'll put this on hold so I don't shut it off. And as you speak your word and you claim it, you have that experience. And that's what our talk is about tonight. Our talk is Healing is a magic word. Words have the power to heal. Okay? We've given you some pretty powerful concepts up to this moment. Many of them are very natural to many of you. And to some of you, they are an anathema. They're something that just destroys your spirit. You say, no, 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 that cannot be so. And hey, that's okay. I want all of you to fight me. Fight me. Say it's not so. Say that you don't believe in me. Because every student I have ever had who fought me and fought a good fight became the most perfect divine spiritual master that could walk the face of the earth. Yeah? You know why? Because they stood on their feet and they found out that it was true. It is the divine within them. It is the God that they are. That is everything. Now, our topic, healing is a magic word. And our first point here, words have power to heal. Words have power to heal. Now, when Mary spoke her word to the children, she said, you are brilliant, you are beautiful, you are whole and perfect, you are lovely, you are a joy to the world. Isn't that what they sang at the birth of Jesus? Joy to the world, the Lord is come. And that's who's come. This Lord is within each one of us. This Christ is within each one of us. This God is within each one of us. So then, as Mary talked to the children, she said, you're beautiful, you're wonderful. Week after week, you're beautiful, you're wonderful. Week after week. And then someone would come, say, Johnny hit me, and he won't be good. He's hurting me. Why is he hurting me? And Mary says, all right, Fred, why is Johnny hurting you? Well, he's taking my toys. And Mary says, why don't you give him your toys? But they're mine. Well, give them to him and he won't hurt you anymore. But they're mine. I don't have to give him something just to make him stop hurting me. We should get the police after him. We should get everything after him to make him stop hurting me. Well, it doesn't work that way, Johnny. Go and love him. Give him what he asks. If he... ouch, then give him the other side, right? Could you feel that? If he hits you on one cheek, give him the other. If he takes your coat, give him your cloak also. These are the words of the master teacher. Why did he teach that stupid stuff, you know? It's not your right to take my coat. It's not your right to take... No, it's not our right to possess anything. When we possess anything, we have already released ownership of it. When we give it away, it is ours forever. So, when Johnny gave Freddy the toy he wanted, Freddy says, well, I really don't want it. I just wanted it because you didn't give it to me. And Johnny says, oh, well, hey, here, play some more of my stuff. And next thing you know, Johnny is a different boy. Why? Because he's not possessing his toys. He's not afraid someone's going to steal them. If someone comes and takes them and forgets to bring them back, that doesn't bother him. He doesn't own anything. Everything belongs to God. You've all heard the story from this church up in Minneapolis where this priest was coming down a staircase and this... person came walking in the front door of the manse, and he's putting all of the gold candlesticks into his bag and so forth, and the priest sees him, and he sees, oh, don't stop me. And the priest says, my son, what is it you'd like? All of these things, they belong to God. All of these things, they belong to you. And the cook said, what kind of a crazy place is this? And he threw everything down and ran out the door and turned himself into the police. His name is Star Daly. He wrote a book called Love Opens Prison Doors. A beautiful story. But you see, possession. If that priest had said, what are you doing with God's things? Put down God's things. How dare you do that to God's things? Well, God doesn't care. The priest might care. But when the priest, who is caretaking these things on behalf of the church, when he doesn't care, what is there to care? Agree with your adversary quickly. So, you have an illness. You have a cancer. And the cancer is a terrible thing. It's really a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. It eats up your insides and it makes everything just bad, 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 bad. But it starts because you have possessive thoughts. It starts because you are a mean person in your heart. Well, I know very loving people who have cancer, and I know people who are filled with joy and harmony and love who have that, and certainly they're not mean people. No. I'm going to give the food to you, and I'll go without because I want to give it to you. I'm going to give my money to you so that you can go and have a good time, and I'll sit at home and give you my good. That's meanness. That's treating yourself, your God self, as less than somebody else. That's saying that everybody in the world is better than you are. And that's not a nice thing to do. So when you start treating the world with the same love that you would want to experience yourself, and of course, in that illustration, that's not a good idea. But if you start loving the world will be a reflection of you. I tried to give all of you a hug, as I got most of you, and every one of you instantly slid into my hug. You guys didn't back there. You will. You all slid into my hug, and you were wonderful. I just felt uplifted by your energy, by your peace, by your joy, by your presence. You were fantastic. Now, I hugged you to give you my hug, and I felt your joy. Now, who got the greatest gift out of this? Yep. You did. But I did. We did. Each one of us individually, whatever we gave of ourselves so freely, it came right back, didn't it? It came right back and just jumped all over us. So when Johnny gives his toys to his friends to use or take home if they wish, it jumps right back on him. It jumps right back on him. We cannot give anything away that doesn't return to us in a very wonderful, beautiful way. We cannot give out love and not have love come back. We cannot give out the feeling of wholeness. Now, I go to this lady right here, see this lady right here, and I say, "Well, love, how nice of you to come and see us." And she says, "I've got cancer of the liver, and I'm not very well." And I says, "Now, just a moment. I see you whole and perfect. I see the Christ in you. I see you as an expression of God's perfect idea of a woman. You are the most dynamic, powerful, beautiful woman on the face of the earth. You're so glorious." And she sort of straightens up, you know. And I say, "You're wonderful. You're magnificent. Oh, I love you so, because you're an expression of me." And she straightens up a little more. And I say, "Come on, let's dance. Da, 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 da." And she does it. She forgot about her hurt. It was really there. And it perhaps still was. But it was really there. And the moment her thought went back to it, then it was there again. Then it was there again. When her thought was on something else, "I'm whole and perfect, I'm fantastic, I am wonderful, I am magnificent," that was what she experienced. I go into hospitals all over the world, and I talk with people all over the world who have great healing needs, and their lives are exacerbated in perfect health and harmony and peace and joy. Their lives are just risen up in the new star of their own inner awareness. In fact, Germany and Switzerland are two crazy countries, really, you know, very, very interesting. And in Germany and Switzerland, they have hospitals. Did you know they have hospitals there? And you know what they call their hospitals? Anybody know? Not you. Anybody know? She is from Switzerland. They call them Krankenhauses, the house of the sick. You want to go to the house of the mental ill people? You want to go to the nut house? You want to go to the nut house? Who wants to be in the nut house, you know? You want to be in the Krankenhaus, the house of the sick? And I said to the doctors and nurses as I'd go into their hospital, I said, this is the Gesundheit house. This is the house of the whole, of the perfect, of the well people. Gesundheit. You know, like some cheese. He said, Gesundheit. Good health to you. 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 And they had a program in Germany. You know how these little cards are that the government gives out to people who, when they're ill, they go to the hospital and they turn in their card. They had a Kranken card. So every time you got crunk, you'd go to the hospital and turn in your crunken card in the Krankenhaus so that you could be more crunk. And that's what happened. And I told them, you should call these Gesundheit cards. This is where people are going for wellness, for wholeness, for perfection. And one of our students was talking to her boss, and she works for the political bureau in Germany, in Frankfurt. And she said, you know, we should call these Gesundheit cards, not Kranken cards. And he says, let me think about it. So he gets up before his Politburo. Gentlemen, today we're going to have a new program for all of Germany. We're not going to have the Kranken cards anymore. We're going to have the Gesundheit cards. My idea. Wonderful. Who cares? Who cares? You know, I am so happy that they did it. And our student, Karen Hussein, who works for the political bureau over there, said that she didn't care who got the credit. She was just happy to see the whole nation of Germany change it over. And Switzerland will too, because they're a German-speaking country. Now, what's going to happen when a whole country stops talking about Kranken and starts talking about Gesundheit? Huh? What's going to happen? Come, not loud. Come. They're going to be whole and perfect. We are what we talk about. I'm whole and perfect. Every organ, action, function in my body is whole and perfect. I'm wonderful. Every morning I get up, 3, 5, sometime right in there, 3 or 4 o'clock, and I take a walk around our meditation property. We have 104 acres up in the mountains in Southern California, meditation trails here and there up in the mountains. And I take my baby Rex along with me. Rex is a golden retriever, 6 months old, my baby. You know, he stands up here, down. And we take a walk around the property. And he pulls. I mean, I'm 25, but still, he pulls, you know. And I say, Rex, no. And he learns that no means don't pull. And he leaves a little loop in the walk, because I only take him on a leash, and he leaves a loop in the walk. Good Rex. That's a good Rex. Wonderful boy. Wonderful boy. Good Rex. He does not have it perfect yet. I do not have it perfect yet. I do not see him doing it perfect yet. But he's getting very close. And the moment I stop seeing him pull on the leash, and I see him only with the little loop in the leash, it is done. The moment you and I stop seeing ourselves sick, poor, with bad relationships between ourselves and others, in any way having a need in our life which is not met, the moment we stop that, then we will be experiencing wholeness. As I say, every morning I walk that path. It takes me about an hour. I have a great walk up and down around the mountains. And then I come back and I usually get into the jacuzzi. And then I get into the swimmix, which is the swimming pool. You swim against a 10-mile-an-hour current. I only go 4 miles an hour. But I have fun. And then we have a bicycle there and a few other little gadgets. And it's wonderful. And I feed my morning puppy, you know, his puppy chow. And whoomph, he breathes it in. And then I go up for my breakfast. And it's a wonderful start to the day. And then
I give a lecture at breakfast called Thought for Today, and we put it on the internet. Then I give a lecture at lunch called Instant Illumination, and I put it on the internet. I give a lecture at supper time called Absolute Philosopher, and we put it on the internet. And then when we have guests there, I give services for ordination. I give services for all sorts of healing programs that are needed. And people call on the phone and ask for spiritual counseling, for wholeness counseling. And then every week I put a special program on the telephone. It's a free telephone number that we have here for Dial a Healing Word. And people can call this Dial a Healing Word and receive this inspiration on healing themselves. And I don't know, what else do I do? I do all sorts of other things, just having a ball. I'm writing letters and writing books and writing, I don't write these talks necessarily, but I make outlines for my thoughts so that I'll give you a programmed set of thoughts that I never follow. But it's a wonderful thing to do. It's a wonderful thing to do. You know, when I was giving lectures in the 60s and the 70s, I always wrote a very complete set of outlines for my notes. But then I ran into a big wall. And that wall was my audience. Because my audience and I were one. And I listened to the hearts of my audience and I spoke to that. And sometimes my notes would never even get noticed. Because I would listen to the audience, as your ministers do. They listen to you, and they speak to you, and they say, oh, it is the Spirit coming through me. It is you. It is your divine self expressing. Let's take a toughie here. Who wants to answer this question? How can we have peace on earth? Anyone want to answer that question? And if you have an answer contrary to mine, don't give it. Yes?
You have to be at peace with yourself.
What's that?
You have to be at peace with yourself.
You have to be at peace with yourself. Now, why in the world do you have to be at peace with yourself to have peace on earth? There now is peace on earth, and it began with me. There now is peace on earth, and it began me. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me. Hell no! There now is peace on earth, and it began with me. Forget this let. Forget this have somebody else do it. Let George do it. Remember? Now. Did you ever say that? Yes, you betcha. You see, it's true. Now there is peace on earth because it began with me. It began in my heart. It began in my thinking. It began in my world. I've had a lot of young people come to me, and they didn't want to be part of the draft, so to speak. They didn't want to be taken into service, both in Switzerland and in the United States here. And I would say to them, well, what can you do about it? You want to serve your country. You want to do what is right by your country because this is your country. But you don't want to serve in the army. You don't want to shoot somebody and do things like that. So what are you going to do? What do you think they did? They just said, now there is peace on earth and it began with me. And I am invisible. I am invisible to the draft. I am invisible to anything which is contrary to my nature. You know? I am invisible. Now, we had these two boys from the same family in Switzerland, and they didn't want to be called into the draft, and they knew that they were in the cycle. And I said, there now is peace on earth, and you're invisible. And they said, both of us? And I said, why are you so incredulous? Why don't you believe? There now is peace on earth, and you are invisible. So they began to say that to themselves. I said, don't tell anybody else. It's only you that matter. It's your point of view that matter. I am invisible. I am invisible. Now you say, that's not very cool. You can say, the war is over and all that sort of good stuff. Just because the war is over, that doesn't mean the draft stops. The draft goes on for a while after the war is over, you know that. So, okay, I'm invisible. They were not called. They had the census where they went through all the names, and they didn't even see their names. They didn't even see it. And I could name for you many here in the United States the same way, but I don't want to promote that sort of thing, that I'm going around helping people stay out of the service. What I'm helping people do is to be master of themselves. You heal yourself. You stay out of service yourself. You walk the right way. Can you imagine Mary walking down the street, wearing her very special clothing, you know, the little short cocktail dress that she has, you know, and the thing holding her breasts up here, so she's really a sexy looking babe. And can you imagine her walking down through one of your lesser districts here in St. Louis? And what's Mary expecting? Is she expecting some wonderful young handsome fellow to come along and sweep her off her feet? What is she expecting? Okay. Mary doesn't do that, of course. She's blushing. Now, Mary doesn't do that. We are whatever we create in our world. If we create people in our world taking advantage of us, they do that. Women who are raped, they create that in their world. Well, I was raped and I didn't create that. And if there was a man, a bad guy, well, why'd you stay with him? Why'd you go with him in the first place? Why did you create that person in your world? It's your fault, not his. You just lured him on. You're just a femme fatale, you know? And it's silly. Why do we lure on illness in our life by saying, I am sick? Now, you come in my office and you say, Dr. Barley, I have a need. And I say, yes, sir. What would you like? And he says, well, I have a need, but my body is, I'm not, be careful. What is your body? Well, my body's whole and perfect, of course. That's what you expect me to say. That's right. Now, how's your body? Now, what do you want from me? What do you want from me? Yeah. Do you want me to say of you that you are whole and perfect? Or do you want me to say of you, okay, I see your sad body, sadder? No, you see, we put the cause in motion. We put the cause in motion. And we'll be talking about that in several different lectures that are coming up. The list is downstairs of the several that we'll be talking about this weekend. So if you don't have it, pick up a copy. And we'll be talking about that. How do you put the cause in motion for your perfect body? Not by telling me what your problem is. Not by telling me what your problem is. What do you tell me? You tell me your solution. What's your solution? Mary says, I'm hungry. I said, great. I'll take away the little food you got there because you don't need it. You say you're hungry and you want to stay hungry. Oh, no. Leave that food there. I want to eat it. Well, why do you want to eat it? Because I want to be full. Oh. You see, each one of us has the privilege of having any experience we want to have in our life. Each one of us has that experience, that we have that privilege. Now, what do you want to experience in your life? Do you want to experience hunger or fullness? Do you want to experience health or sickness? Do you want to experience wealth or poverty? Do you want to experience friendship or lack of friendship? What do you want to experience? Put that cause in motion. Put that cause in motion. You do not talk about things you don't want to experience. Sir, I'd like a job in your company. You are the president of IBM and so forth like that. You know, it sounds like a good firm, you know. I'd like to work for you. I don't know beans about IBM. I don't know anything about your company. And last company I was in, I stole from the till. And the company I was in before that, I stole the guy's daughter away and got married. And he kicked me out because he didn't like me for doing that. And the company before that, Do you think that I'd get hired? Do you think I'd get hired acting like that? Because that is not what I want to do. When you want a job, you go in there and tell them what your assets are, what your desires are, what your reality is, who you really are. And then they will hire you based upon what you believe about yourself. Can you do the job?
Of course.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Why should I hire her if she says, I'm not really sure whether I can do the job or not? Well, look, I've got a lot of people who feel they can do the job. I'm not going to pull around people who feel they cannot do the job or who don't even know what the job is in the first place, you know? Now, you have a gardener here at this church. And this man is a pure idiot, you know. He goes out there not realizing that you cannot make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, you know. You cannot take an ugly-looking piece of property and make it into a paradise garden. He doesn't know that. He just goes out there and stone by stone, step by step, love by love, he plants the garden. He plants the field. And what once was just an ordinary backyard, very nice backyard, but just ordinary, today is a paradise. But you don't know what it's going to be tomorrow. You don't know what beautiful flowers are going to bloom around the garden. You don't know how many little children are going to run out there and scream and holler and say, I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me. You don't know. You don't know how many lives are going to be changed because one man had a vision of making a beauty spot out of an ordinary backyard. There's a man in Chicago, you've probably read about him. He was retired. He lived in his home, row houses. You know how row houses are. And the front of his house was a mess. Everybody else's was a mess, too. Everybody threw garbage on the front lawn. The street was a mess, and there's a median in the middle of the street, you know, that divided the street. And so one day he said, you know, I think I'll rake my front yard. The front yard, you know, toothpick, you know. And he raked his front yard, picked up all the garbage, all of the trash cans, all the things that everybody threw there. And then the next day he went out, he said, that's good. I think I'll clean up this neighbor's, and I'll clean up this neighbor's. And next thing you know, he goes and cleans up the whole block. But the neighbors looked at it and they said, gosh, that looks nice. And they continued to pick up things that were dropped there until they weren't dropped there anymore. Then he went out into the middle of the road in this median strip, and he cleaned that up. Now, it was no big deal, you know. It was just the length of a city block. And he cleaned it up with this coaster wagon that had long since seen its day. And he took it and put it in the dump, little by little. And then, after that was done, everybody helped him. People started buying little trees to plant out there, putting in a watering system for him. And then there's a vacant lot down at the corner, which was in disrepair. And he said to a couple of the neighbor ladies, he said, would you want to give me a hand at this? I'd sort of like to make that neighbor that lived, that vacant lot, very pretty. But you don't own it. You don't own it. You're making somebody else's lot look nice. They might come and want to build on it right in the middle of when you're cleaning it up. So what? So what? I'm doing it because it makes me feel good. And the neighbor ladies helped him. The children came home from school. Can we help? Can we help? Sure. And they picked up all of the trash from that vacant lot, which was a great deal. And they hauled it away. And then it became the children's playground. They put up a baseball diamond there. And the children began to learn to play near their home, where their parents could watch over them, where they could see who were their friends. And they had a wonderful time. But you see, that little seed, like your gardener here, the little seed, like that man, caring about his front lawn, caring about the neighbors. And what happened? The whole neighborhood called him Mr. Wonderful. They didn't remember his name. They didn't care. They didn't need to know it. They just said he's Mr. Wonderful. And he received the respect of everyone. And the mothers began respecting each other because they began to know each other. Before that, they had no reason to meet each other as neighbors, because who wants to go out in a filth-strewn front yard and say hello, you know? You see, when peace is in our own heart, then we reach out and we have peace on earth. When peace is within our own heart, then we reach out and we have peace on earth. And it's a wonderful thing. When you begin to put the right causes in motion for what you want to experience, then you experience it. But you cannot experience it unless you don't put the causes in motion. You cannot have it unless you put the causes in motion. Now, what is it you want to put the causes in motion for? What is it you want to put it in? We're just about there, aren't we? What is it you want to put the causes in motion? Do you want to put the causes in motion for health, for magnificence, for who you really are? Think about it. Just think about it. We're going to have a pause now, and I'm going to give an offering blessing, and then we'll pass around an offering box or something, and you can give your love offering, and we will take do you want to take time now and have coffee and a cookie, or you want to have it after I'm done? What?
After.
What?
After.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Let's take our offerings in our hands now. And let's realize that this is the temple of the living God. Our body is the temple of the living God. And as a temple of the living God, our body is whole and perfect right now. Our body is magnificent right now. And you are magnificent right now. So let's close our eyes for just a moment. And let's recognize that everything that flows to us out of our own first giving out. Good goes from me, good comes to me. And as it flows out of me, then it can come to me. As I give of my love to others, I see my love reflected in others. I see my joy reflected in others. As I give my gift of joy to others, as I give my gift of money to the organizations that sponsor positive thinking for me and positive living, sponsor my way into my spiritual path that leads me into the allness that I am. As I share, I open the doorway for which there is no closure, and all good flows into my life in absolute abundance. But it doesn't flow in. It just flows out. It just flows out. It just flows out. And the divine in me is endless. The divine in me is eternal, immortal, magnificent God. The divine in me is all that matters. Now, after our offering statement, we're going to talk about a lady who was dying of cancer, but who had the power to make a change. And we'll find out what she did to change her life. I bless you, and I love you, and I give thanks for your generous contributions to all that you believe and all that you know is true.
And every day, as you give your heartfelt thoughts of love to your church, to your center, to your teachers, it returns to you a zillionfold, and you are infinitely blessed. I love you, and I bless you, and so it is. God's love is deep within me, ever satisfying my soul. God's love is deep within me, ever satisfying my soul. God's love is deep within me, ever satisfying my soul. God's love is deep within me, ever satisfying my soul. God's love is deep within me, ever satisfying my soul. God's love is deep within me, ever satisfying my soul. Thank you very much. I bless you, and I love you. So, here we go. How many of you have ever seen a person who is dying of cancer? Okay. And what did they look like? Did they all look like they're shriveled up like little peanuts going back in the shell? Many of them did. Many of them didn't. Many of them died before they got to that point. Okay. Why is it that they had to die? Why is it that they had to have this problem? Why is it that they felt insecure in themselves? Why? They felt insecure in themselves because they didn't know who they were. They did not know that they are God. They did not know that the words of Jesus are really powerful and meaningful. And don't think that you're so wonderful because you're Christian-oriented. The Hindus teach the same thing. They teach that everyone is God, everything is God, all is God, nothing else but God. They get a little carried away, but that's wonderful too. We should get carried away too. The Islamic people, they teach the same thing. They don't all know that because they get off on a tangent of Jesus on the cross. No, that's Christians, isn't it? Yeah. No, the Islams get off on their tangents. The Christians get off on their tangents. Now, what is Christianity? It's teaching the philosophy that Jesus brought forth, right? Did Jesus bring forth the philosophy of the cross? No. He died for what reason? To show that the last enemy man would overcome is death. The last enemy man would overcome is death. That's what he said. He said that. He said, I must go to show you that the last enemy man will overcome is death. Okay. So, I was in a church in the Imperial Valley in Southern California. And I had a nice group of people there. I'd fly down there from the United Church of Religious Science, where I was associate editor of the Science of Mind magazine. I'd fly down there every Sunday and hold a Sunday school, and then I'd hold a Sunday service, and then I'd have a special service for the rest home, and then I'd have an hour-long television program, and then I would go and visit all the hospitals. It's a very busy day, but it's wonderful. And one of my students there asked me if I would go visit her mother, who was in the hospital. She's dying of cancer. And I said, sure. So I went in to see Irene, and here this lovely little old lady was just all nothing, you know, just a little bundle of nothing, a little peanut. And I said, well, Irene, I hear you're dying of cancer. And she says, how dare you come in here and say I'm dying of cancer? But have you no feeling at all? And I said, sure, I got feeling. But that's what your daughter said, you're dying of cancer. Well, who are you? Well, I'm your daughter's minister. Oh, you're, I know about you. I know about you. I said, okay, but are you dying of cancer? Yes. I said, do you want to die of cancer? Do I have a choice? I said, well, of course. It's your body.
It's your body. Well, the doctor says I'm going to die. And I said, yes. The doctor says, if you keep doing the thoughts in your mind, the actions of your body and so forth, and continue just the way you are, you'll die. Because you're going downhill. You can tell it. And she says, well, I didn't know I had a choice. And I said, certainly you do. Now, do you want to live or do you want to die? I want to live. And I said, all right, Irene, how much intestinal fortitude do you have? How much gut do you have? She said, what do you mean? I said, do you feel that you're strong enough to say, doctor, I want you to tell my family that it's a misdiagnosis and that I'm whole and perfect? And she says, well, what if it doesn't work? What will people think of me? I said, who cares? If you're dead, you're dead. If you're alive, you're alive, you know? Who cares? It's your life, you know? You're not worried about what other people think of you. And she says, all right, I'll do it. So we called the doctor in, and the doctor went, cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo. Last word of a dying person, last desire, you know, give them their last dinner or whatever they want. And so the doctor told the family it was a misdiagnosis, that she is whole and perfect, and she's would be, you know, well in no time at all. And the family came running in, Grandma, Mama, Grandma, Mama, oh, you're wonderful. Oh, I'm so happy for you. Oh, you're okay now. It's so wonderful. Fantastic, you know. And aside from the fact that she had a lovely family, aside from the fact the family loved her very much, she also had a couple of thousand acres there in the Imperial Valley that were worth millions of dollars, you know. And there was no reason for her to cut out, you know. Why cut out when you got all that abundance to enjoy, you know? So, in a couple of weeks, she was strong enough to be sitting up in bed and getting ready to get out. In a couple of months, that is 6 months, she was back on the tennis court. Back on the tennis court! Now, that's a true story. That's Irene. A magnificent lady. Fantastic. And she was no young spring chicken. She was a grandma. Of course, all grandmas are young spring chickens, aren't they? But she was in her 70s, maybe 80s, but probably 70s. And she's fantastic. Now, I went to her, and I put my hand on her, and I said, you're whole and perfect. You're whole and perfect. You're whole and perfect. And that made her whole and perfect. Aren't I good? Ooh, aren't I good? Am I so wonderful? No. I merely spoke to her and said, you have an opportunity for any choice you want to make. I can't take something away from somebody who wants whatever they have. If you want your illness, you tell me. How do you feel? Perfect. Isn't he wonderful? How do you feel? You?
Perfect.
All of you? Come on, a concert.
Perfect!
Wonderful. Now, do any of you have any ills that you want to have corrected? Because right now, I will come and lay my hand on you, and you'll be instantly healed. But. If you don't do it for yourself, it will come back to you. The doctor can take away the ulcer, the cancer, the problem, but the illness will come back again if you have not changed your attitude about yourself. If you have not put a new cause in motion, be ye perfect, therefore, as is your Father which art in heaven. We put the cause in motion. I am whole and perfect. I am the pure white light of love. I am surrounded by harmonious beings and harmonious circumstances. All of my world is purity and goodness. All of my body, my life is purity and goodness. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. Do you know what an ideal spirit, mind, and body is? Heaven to Vegas, do you? Nobody does. Sounds good, though, doesn't it? Okay, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. Now, what's the ideal car like? What's the ideal car like? It always runs.
It always runs.
It has no problems. The ideal car always runs. Now, does the ideal car always have gas in it? Does the ideal car always have oil? Does the ideal car have any parts that wear out?
No.
Does the ideal car have tires that wear out?
No.
Does the ideal car have a driver who is not always driving perfectly? The ideal car always has a driver who drives perfectly. Okay? How does that happen? When you get in your car, do you say, this is an ideal car. It is perfect. Or do you say, this old ramshackle thing, I'm getting ready to turn it in. Maybe you might be a little ahead of your time. Bless your car. My car, I surround it with my pure white light of love. All its ways are peace, and all its paths are pleasantness. My car, I surround it with my pure white light of love. All its ways are peace, and all its paths are pleasantness. And the road is open before me. That's a nice addition. I surround my car with my pure white light of love. All its ways are peace, and all its paths are pleasantness. Now, you, each, are the pure white light of love. So now, I am the pure white light of love. I surround my body with my pure white light of love. My body's not me. My body is a reflection of what I believe about it. If I cut off a hand, I am not without me. The real me is still there. Understand? So just because there's a part missing, that doesn't mean that the real me is not there. In Carillion photography, this is an energy photography, they take pictures of the body where fingers are cut off, and the energy pattern of the finger is still there. It's wonderful. We don't realize it because we are not into that subtlety, and we don't need to be in. But we should be into the realization, whatever thought we have in our mind, that's our experience. Now, is your body whole and perfect?
Perfect.
True. Always, forever, immer and immer and immer. Like the Germans would say, always and always and always. Yes. Do you ever have a problem with your body? No. The only problem that we have with our body is thinking that it wants its own way. If your car starts pulling off to the right while you're driving, and so you're holding it to stay in the middle of the road, who's not doing their job? You. The car says, help me, I want a helping hand. I need to have a new tire. I need to have a new adjustment, alignment. I want to true myself up. That's the car. So we take the car in for adjustment and tunement, and then it stays right in the middle of the road and drives perfectly. Our body is the expression of our mental attitude about ourselves. When we start loving our body, respecting our body, and thinking good about our body responds to us in its perfect way. This is a perfect idea, a perfect concept. What did we say before? I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. If you could see your ideal spirit, mind, and body, you'd say, oh my goodness, I didn't recognize myself. Because you see, it wouldn't have any of our thoughts that we can't do things. It wouldn't have any of our thoughts that we have heredity, you know, and we have genes and chromosomes and all these other things that are limiting us. Many times I go into hospitals and deal with people who have hormones, genes, chromosomes, and various DNA that are all upsetting them, and the doctors are all uptight about it. I say, hey, now, can you keep a secret? And they love, everybody loves secrets. Now, can you keep a secret? Let's mess up the doctor. And let's tell our genes, our chromosomes, our DNA to shape up. Be whole and perfect. And you know what will happen? It'll be whole and perfect. Just like that. Now, there was a doctor, a fine young man, about 22, scientist, and he's working in the scientific laboratory. Bong! The idea came to him. My lymph gland fluid is important somehow. I don't know how it's important, but I believe it's important. So he took some of the lymph fluid out of his own body, and he put it away in a freeze cupboard or something. And then, 10 years later, he remembered it there, and he took it out, and he injected it in his body. And his body returned to the attitude it was 10 years previous. Now, he did it again. He did it several times. But of course, not many people are willing to go through such an experiment. And guinea pigs are hard to come by. But he did it, and it worked for him each time. He wrote about it. He wrote a paper about it. And what he conjectured was that our mind, by telling the lymph fluid in our body, in infiltrating the lymph fluid in our body, however that happens, that we are 20 years old, or we're 22 years old, and we act like we're 22 years old, and we're living like we're 22 years old, and our body is functioning like it's 22 years old, and our lungs and our heart and our liver and everything else about us are that 22-year-old mental attitude. And then his body functioned that way. Now, there's a lot of old bucks who would like to have that done. You know, they got a lot of money. They like the lymph fluid to come out and put it back in. Well, it doesn't work that way. They didn't do it soon enough. They should have done it when they were 20. Because they took it out, and then they put it in the next year, and so they were a year younger. But that's not enough to make a big difference, is it? Because their mental attitude is still the same. And the mental attitude took them right back to where they were, right back to the attitude of being limited. Okay. What I'm telling you is the makeup of our body, the makeup of our mind, the makeup of who we are mentally, physically, spiritually, is a divine idea. And we are created perfect. Now, how many of you will admit to having read the first chapter of Genesis? A few of you. Not all of you. But the first chapter of Genesis, it said, I create man and woman. And it was done. There was no Adam and Eve. There was no rib. There was no nothing. The first chapter, man and woman, same instant. And the ending of the first chapter said, I have created everything and it is... Come. Loud. No. Good and very good. Good and very good. Remember? I created everything and it's good, but it didn't really come out like that. Read it again. You'll find that there's a we in there. The law of cause and effect and I created the human being, good and very good. The law of cause and effect created the human being, the law of cause and effect in God, the mind of God, the action of the law of cause and effect, created the body good and very good. Now, where did the body go wrong in having a problem now and then? Where did the body go wrong in having a limitation? In the mind, in the thought. According to our thought, it is done unto us. According to your thought. Now, what thought do you want to have? You. Are you a happy... Oh, I like that. Are you a happy lady?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. You too? And you? And you?
Yes.
You?
Yes.
She had a frown on her face. She was looking like this. You know? Down at the edges of her... And we had a woman on campus for the last couple of weeks, about 5 weeks. And she's from Switzerland. And she's... her husbands have died and various things, and she's on her own, and she's just a lovely little lady, and she's always looking, down on the edge of the rear, and she says, I'm a happy person. I said, it's sure hard to tell. I'm a happy person. It's hard to tell. I said, come on, put some toothpicks in there and push it up, get that smile going on your face. And she says, but I'm a happy person. And I worked with her on that. And when you smiled at me, smile. When you smiled at me, your whole face changed. You know what happened? You know what happened when you smiled at me? The light in you went on. The light in us goes on when we smile. the light in us of our wholeness and our perfection, our beauty, our wonder, our magicness goes on. You have the light of magic inside of you, but it can't come out if you don't give it passage through your smile. Are you a wonderful person? Are you a fantastic person? Are you a person who is always filled with smiles and happiness? My mom, we have five kids in our family, you know, and that's no big deal. Many of you had more or less, but my brothers and sisters were all perfect, of course, you know, all fantastic. That's the way mother raised us, you know. We're all ideal beings. And but mother did have some tussles with raising us. You know how that happens sometimes. And she raised us very lovingly and very powerfully. And one thing mother always did, everyone in the world that has ever known her or met her, they call her the smiling lady. She lived from the inside out. She lived with the joy of her life shining out. I told you she died, remember? Okay. When she died, she forgot for a few minutes to live from the inside out. There was a time of war in the world. There was a time of unhappiness. There was a time of problems that she felt she couldn't work with. I didn't tell her better, but I tried. And I didn't try hard enough, though, did I? So she decided to kick off. And she went. She's off on some other dimension, just having a ball, doing things that mothers should do after raising five kids. And she is a wonderful lady. Now, what about you? What excuse do you have for not living in happiness all the time? There's a beautiful series of books out by our friend Eckhart Tolle, T-O-L-L-E. And it's about living in the now. And it is a very fascinating series of chapters and stories about living in the now. For myself, it's a little bit complex. Because as I read it, I feel, yes, 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 but how do I apply it? How do I apply it? How do I apply it? That's a tough thing. See, writers can write beautiful knowledge, beautiful wisdom, beautiful ideas, but the application is where the trouble comes in. You go to the doctor, and the doctor says, now you take these pills one time a day with this one time a day with this one, one time a day with this one. This one's morning, this one's noon, and this one's night. Now, just before you go to bed, you take six of these. And you say, my God, you know. And so you take them for a couple of days. And then after a while, you say, I feel worse taking these pills than before I started taking them. And so you stop taking them. And then you get worse. And you go to the doctor, I feel worse. He said, have you been taking pills? No. Well, why not? Because I felt worse. Well, if you would take the pills, they would do the work for you. If you will take the pills, they will do what I want them to do. Now, my love, you are telling the doctor, you know, push it up your nose, aren't you? Okay. Why don't you just say to the doctor, thank you, doctor. Here's the bill for my bill. Here's the money for my bill for you. I am going to go and do what I think is right. And so then, what does she do? She goes home and she kneels in front of the altar and says, oh, Lord, show me the way. Well, she's already got the way. So instead of kneeling to an outside presence, she listens to the inside presence. She says, God, I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. And then what happens? The telephone rings and it says, say, come over, I want you to help me here. So you go over and help and you say, oh boy, this is fun. And you get so busy, you forget about being sick. And then somebody else comes into your life. And then somebody has a need. And you go over and work with them. And you do hundreds of different things. And you forget about yourself.
You forget about your own need or hurt or whatever it was that made you go to the doctor in the first place. You forget about it. And you start concentrating on wholeness. You start concentrating on love. You start concentrating on goodness. And you're whole and perfect. You're whole and perfect. You see, this is the law of cause and effect. The law of cause and effect says, whatever cause you put in motion, an effect equal to it will take place. Whatever cause you put in motion, an effect equal to it will take place. This is a universal principle that we all use, that we've all used. What did Jesus say when he said, pray the Lord's Prayer? Remember? He says, go unto your Father and pray unto your Father, saying, Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Praise that inner presence of God in you. Thy kingdom come, who I really am, my ideal spirit, mind, and body, my kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven, as it is in the divine reality in this physical body right now. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. What is the will of God? What is the will of God? You are perfect. You are good and very good. Remember? You are good and very good. So quickly forget it, you know. But this is what the will of God is. You are good and very good. That's all that God teaches. That's all that the divine teaches. That's all that we need to know. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day, we say, forgive us this day, our debtors, and as we forgive our debtors. Do you owe me anything? Do I owe you anything? I only owe it to me to be all I can be. How many of you are aware of what goes on in the field of sports? In the field of sports, the sportsman gets out there and he learns the craft of his sport. Let's say he's a skier, schlushing along, skiing just beautifully, you know about that. And the skier is just having a great old time. And then she comes along and she says, I'm a coach. I'm going to train you into being a better skier if you like. And you say, fine, wonderful, come coach. And so she trains us. And she says, now what do you want to do? Do you want to do the downhill? You want to do the leaps, the lifts, the jumps, whatever various things skiers do? What do you want to do? And you say, I want to do the downhill with all the speed and all the magic that I can possibly whip up. And she says, great. Now, I want you to come with me. So she takes you into her house. And she puts you in a room. And she closes the door. And you think to yourself, what have I gotten myself into? And she says to you, all right, I want you to come here every day for 30 minutes at 8 o'clock every morning. Sit in this room, and I want you to visualize yourself skiing with perfect facility down that hill. I want you to visualize this. And after 3 months of you doing that, we will go out on the slope and we'll work. Well, it happens to be summertime, so it's convenient. You know, there's no snow anyhow. So you go in and you sit in the room for a half hour every day. I mean, it's not too hard. And so comes the snow season and the time is up. And she takes you out on the slope. And she says, all right, before you move 1 foot on the ski, you stop there. Close your eyes, visualize yourself going down that hill beautifully, perfectly, wonderfully, in the most skillful, dramatic, majestic way that you could ever dream of doing. And then go to it. Hey, what have you been doing these 3 months? Have you been visualizing yourself? Oh, sure, but that's easy. Then I have my eyes closed. And then close your eyes now. What? Close the eyes and go down the hill? Oh, you crazy ladies, you know.
You're crazy, coach, you know. And she says, yes, I'm crazy smart. Now, you don't have to close your eyes, but just believe in yourself. You have worked on that now for 3 months. And as you start down the hill, it'll all come to you.
She says, yeah, I'll be wrapped up around a tree.
No, no, no. You know better than that. You will go down perfectly. And she persuades him to believe in himself. You to believe in yourself. And so then you go down the hill and you say, wow, it was nothing. I moved like the most graceful being that ever lived. It was wonderful. And you will. You will. Maxwell Maltz taught people how to do basketballs and how to throw them and how to be a good basketball team. He had one team that worked out on the floor for a period of 3 weeks. One team that worked out in a dark room for a period of 3 weeks. And then he pitted the two teams together. The team that worked out on the floor was good, but the team that worked out in a dark room had made no mistakes. And they didn't expect to make mistakes. They knew that every shot they made perfect. And every movement of the ball was perfectly done. Perfectly. There was no mistakes. Because they didn't have any mistakes in their consciousness. Okay? Are you willing to take the time that it takes to put the cause in motion to say that I'm wealthy, I'm healthy, I'm happy, I'm hearty, and whatever you want to say. Got lots of friends and this and that. You want to say that? Okay. Just take one of them. Take one and demonstrate it. But I want them all. No, take one. I have a student in Switzerland. He called me. He said, I've got these needs. I have my girlfriend and my job and my teaching in the school and my teaching at the department stores and my teaching here and this and that and the other thing and the counseling I'm doing. He said, they're working out good, but they're not fast enough. And I said, my friend, take one and go for it. Take one. Prove it to yourself. All the rest of them will fall right in place. But take one. Take one. I was teaching a young lady to drive a golf cart. You say, well, that's not hard. With me, it is. I taught her how to drive that golf cart. I said, Esther, when I say put on the brake, I want you to stop. Because there's a little child in front of the golf cart that you'll hit and kill if you don't stop. So we're driving along. Stop! You know, all shook up. And I meant to do that. Because if a little child runs in front of your car, you get all shook up. And you must not do that. You must always be in charge. You must always be responsible. And you're responsible when you are untouched by anything else that goes around you. And so I worked with her about 3 days, and that was all she could handle. So then one of our other people went out and worked with her. But she came to me before she stopped her visit after being there a number of weeks. And she says, Herb, she says, I know how to drive a golf cart. But now I know everything you were teaching me in the very beginning and that I was rebellious at you, not at driving or anything else. I was rebellious. And therefore, I didn't learn what I could have learned like that. You know? Like that. We rebel. Agree with your adversary quickly. Agree with whatever it is that's giving you a hard time right away. And how's our smile over here? Fantastic! She is such a glorious beam of light. My goodness, anyone who has her in their world, it must be lifted up. And as Jesus said, if I be lifted up, all the world is lifted up unto me. Okay, you're healed, all of you. But take an aspect of healing and put it to work in your life. And as you put it to work in your life, what's going to happen? What's going to happen is that you are lifted up. You are healed. Now, so some of you say, I want money. Some of you say, I want relationships. Some of you say, I want the perfect mate for me. Or some of you say, I want my mate to be perfect for me. either way, that's good too. But what's going to happen? Let's just say, I want my mate to be perfect for me. When you married, did you ever marry? Okay. When you married, did you marry the most fabulous woman on the face of the earth?
Yes.
And I'm not going to ask you the next question, but sometimes the fabulous woman on the face of the earth changes. And what changed? What changed was our attitude about ourselves. We grew, but we didn't include them. We didn't draw this circle of love to include them in. We drew our circle of experience, and we didn't include our family. We didn't include our loved one. And because we didn't include them, we grew apart. Okay, now, I know there's no problem there. If you have a relationship that is on the edge of falling apart, stop and think of all the training work you did with that woman or that man in your life to build them up to the magnificent person that they are now. You know, why throw them away just because you haven't recognized it as fully as you could? Rather than jumping out and getting divorced, just say, sweetheart, I see you whole and perfect. I see you whole and perfect. I see you whole and perfect. Because I see me whole and perfect. I see me whole and perfect. And if I keep seeing her whole and perfect, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to all of a sudden fall in love with her again. I'm going to all of a sudden realize, wow, I've got the most beautiful woman. I've got the most beautiful woman that anyone could ever want in the world, you know? Isn't that fantastic? But that's the way it works. Okay, now. That's for your relationship. Now, what about your body? I have the most beautiful body in the world. I look great. I feel great. I'm doing everything. I keep losing my pants here, you know, and all that good stuff. What is it? What is it? We create our world by our word. And that's what we said here. Healing is a magic word. Healing is a magic word. Words have power to heal. The magic of healing word is its cause. And samples of words effectively used, we've done that. Start training early in life and you are being fortified. Now, let's just take this point. Oh, it feels the time already. Goodness, thanks. Okay, aren't you glad I read what I was going to tell you about? let's take this last point here. You are being fortified. Okay. You're home perfect. Yes.
Yes.
You're home perfect. Yes. You're home perfect. Yes. You're rich. Yeah. Didn't expect that, did you? Yeah. You're beautiful. Yeah. Gorgeous. Yes?
Yes.
Yes. Wonderful. And you are the most desirable thing to walk on the face of the earth.
Yes.
Yes?
I want to be all of the above.
See what I mean? This is what makes the problem. We want to be everything. It's like my friend in Switzerland who called and said, it's so slow. But it's so slow because he's trying to do everything at once. And if you just... I told him, are you the most desirable man in the world? Yes. You know. Does your... Huh? Oh, yeah. Oh, you would. Yeah. And he'd like you, too. But do you create around you beautiful, desirable people? And you have to make up your mind. Well, now, let's just finish this off here. You are being fortified. The comment you think of me, of saying, man, he is tough. He is sort of, you know, beating us to pieces here, and he is expecting the best out of us. He is seeing each one of us as a master, as a glorious being. All right? You see yourself that way 24 hours of the day. And if you choose one point, within a week, you will have demonstrated that point. Now, do you know what I said? I said, if you will, for 24 hours a day, 24 hours a day, take one point. In a week, you have it.
You think there's anybody here who could do it for 24 hours a day? You know, we have a statement that we use. What's our statement that we like to use? I like me. I'm whole and perfect. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, body. But no, we had another one that we would say, but let's just say, I like me, okay? We do this one too. I like me, I like me, I like me. And then we get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. I like me, I like me, I like me. I like me, I like me, I like me. I like me, I like me, I like me. We get up and have breakfast. I like me, I like me, I like me. And under our breath, you know, and we drive to town. I like me, I like me, I like me. Of course, you guys live in town. We live out in the country. But I like me, I like me, I like me. And lunchtime comes along. I like me, I like me, I like me. I like me, I like me, I like me. I like me, I like me, I like me. I like me, I like me, I like me. If I like me, could I ever do or think anything against who I am? No. If you can build up in your consciousness, I like me, I like me, I like me. I like me, I like me, I like me. You will have every wonderful and good experience you could ever desire. You will have perfect health. Because if you like yourself, you make no room for ill health. You will be independently wealthy if you say, I like me, I like me, I like me. Because you will not build up a need in your world. You will have everything, you know? Any of you ever heard of Bill Gates? Do you think Bill Gates has to pay for anything? Sure he does. Sure he does. Do you think Bill Gates goes into a store and doesn't expect to pay for it because, I am the richest man in the world, you should just be damn glad I came in your store? You know, no way. Bill Gates does not think he's better than somebody else. He goes in that store and he puts down his 25 cents at the White Castle hamburger for his hamburger. And he says, Bill, the price has gone up. But no, he pays. He pays. And he is perfectly happy to pay. Who wouldn't be if he had all the money in the world, you know? But that's not the point. He does not want something for nothing, because if he gets something for nothing, he'll lose it. It'll be taken from him. You don't want something for nothing. So you pay for your health by saying, I like me, I like me, I like me. You pay for your wealth by saying, I like me, I like me, I like me. And you, in school, you say, I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. And you will have the answer to all your questions, all your problems. Now, I'm going to go on with this sort of stuff for the next couple of days. And those of you who want to be there, at 9 a.m. till 5 tomorrow, we will have healing as a way of life at the Soul Esteem Center. And Sunday, I will speak at both services on Next Step Illumination. That's a real good one. And then, I thought we had something else here too. Healing is a way of life. Oh, using the law of cause and effect, that's for the Sunday morning services. And then in the afternoon, we'll have a seminar called Next Step Illumination. And these will be lots of fun things. And I think, Sally, you wrote down something else here too. You said, what did you say? Sally, tell me. Where is the fountain of love?
Right here. The fountain of love for each other, in each other.
We come
together.
We're
speaking at both services.
Yeah, that's right.
And if we show up, we are the fount of love for each other.
Okay, what Sally has done here is to bring on another point. And of course, I know it's time for you to go, so you leave anytime you want. But Sally has brought on a point. And I think it's, for me, a very significant point. Sally says, we are the fountain of love for each other. I beg to disagree. We are the fountain of love for ourselves. A lone soul by ourselves, nobody else, nobody else, nobody else. However we see the world is how it is. And if I really am a fount of love, I'm going to see you whole and perfect, right? However I see the fountain of love in me is how I'm going to see you. And how do I see you? Wow. Ooh. Man, oh man, you know, the brilliance of her light just makes me glow. But this is what it is. We each are the fountain of love, the fountain of light, each one of us. And who can tell me what we do with that fountain of light? We do what, Sally? We do what? We turn up the rheostat. You know what a rheostat is? We turn up the rheostat of the fountain of love, of light, until we become so bright that we see nobody and nobody sees us, and we are the allness and we are the absolute. Now, I know none of you want to go that far, and so I won't tell you how to do it. But as you turn up this rheostat and are that pure white light of love, your world will be so magnificent, so fulfilled, and so grand that no words will ever be able to define it for you or open the door for you. Eckhart Tolle teaches living in the now, in the now, in the now, in the now, in the now. And he's right. Because there's only now, and there's only here, the here and now. There is no past, no future, there is no present. There's only the now. And when are you going to turn up your light? Now. Now. Together. Now. 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 And let's make it into a big round. Now. 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 Loud. Now. Put the power in it. Now. 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 Okay. Now. I should quit. But there's another point I want to make. Many of you are ministers. And you're pretty good. But you don't like yourself. You don't like yourself. Because this is what you do. Oh, let us pray. Let us turn to the indwelling spirit of God. And let's speak so that the divine in us will realize what we are. As we pray to the world. You're a minister. You're a minister. You're ministering to your congregation. You're ministering to your world. Let us turn to the divine within us and let the divine within us reveal all that we are, the magnificence that God is in us. Let the divine in us be all that we know and all that we can ever be. You say, my God, Herb, you're an evangelist. If you are going to play the game and pretend that you're a minister, be heard. Or sit down. You know? Sally Horry made a beautiful tape the other day. And I played the tape on one of my computers. And Sally came across like this. And I thought, oh no. Not my Sally, you know. And so then I took the disc up to the house, where we have my beautiful Bose speakers, you know, with all their volume and all their dynamics, and we put it on there, and Sally came out, and now we are meditating upon these beautiful thoughts. You see? And I listened to it, and I said, wow, what a woman, yeah? What a man, I believe her. Now, when you speak, I like me, with all that enthusiasm, and believe yourself, the miracle happens in your life. Thank you for being with me tonight, and be with me tomorrow and the next day if you wish. It'll be my great joy to have you, and we'll have lots more stories that'll delight your soul and tickle your heart and lift you up into the reality that